It's the 6th of March, and we have an exam next week, which we'll discuss again today. We'll discuss it today as we go through the calculations. Chapters 5, very important, all the terminologies. Make sure you know all the slides. I'm going to ask you all these things, folks. Odd lot differential, bid, ask, price, spread, selling short, margining. I'm going to ask you what would all is in the presentations. There's a whole lot more in chapters 5 in the book, and they go in a lot of detail that you don't have to do. And then the calculations that we will start today and continue, hopefully finish up most of the calculations today, continue on Thursday. So if you missed today, if you're listening at home, you missed next Tuesday, contact me because there's a lot to do. You need a Scantron for next week, of course. One page of notes, along with the formula sheet that I'll give you today. You get to take one page of notes, front and back, handwritten, along with the formula sheet that we do today. And we're going to continue with chapter 6. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? Five is the multiple choice will be all chapter 5. The calculations will be all chapter 6. There's a couple of calculations from chapter 5 that we did. Very simple. Price to earnings ratio, dividend yield, dividend payout ratio. The formulas will be on the exam. But the other calculations that we're going to start today and do on Tuesday, they're the more serious ones. And there's where I'm passing out the formula sheet right now. So who's got a good joke? Nobody's got a good joke?
Did you talk about the alligator?
I told you the one about the alligator.
and
I told...
Yeah, well, wait.
Pounds of limes or lemons are very expensive?
Yeah, lemons.
Why is that?
Economy is not right here. And, well, on Facebook, I just posted on my wall that I exchanged an iPhone 5 for a 400.
You exchanged a what?
iPhone 5.
An iPhone 5
for
4 pounds of limes. Okay. Okay.
Best joke ever.
That was the best joke. You think so? My brain. All right. No, let's not say it again. So let's skip the joke for today. I mean, I don't know if that was a joke. I don't know what was it. Yeah, extra is good. All right. On Tuesday. Oh, wait. Let's go look and see how we're doing. We're still, I don't know, stubborn. I think the rest of the market's doing pretty well, but we've been pretty stubbornly stuck at about minus 2%. Ooh, look at DDB. Now, see, one stinker, folks, one stinker. Yeah, we can sell it, but now's the time to sell it. You know, is that the time to sell it? Well, that's the question. That's the problem. When we chose this company, we knew we were choosing something very, very risky. And this is the kind of company that could be a 10-bagger, as Peter Lynch likes to say, or it can be, you know, come and become nothing, you know, when somebody else comes along and steals their lunch and becomes the de facto standard for 3D printing. So we knew that going forward. All the others are DuPont. Costco got a bit of a hit today because they got their earnings disappointed Wall Street's estimates, so they went down a couple of percent. Not that big a deal. I still think Costco's not going anywhere anytime soon. All the others are excellent companies that you hold on for the long term, but that's the one that's pulling us down. Okay, so let's get back to the presentation. And if you remember, we took a look at price to earnings, P over E, price to cash flow, and price to sales. So let's quickly take a look at these three again. Price divided by earnings, a price to earnings ratio of 14 to 17 is average, 20 is pretty exciting, anything above 20 is really exciting. Anything below, say 12, 10, the investors are not too high about that. Price to cash flow works the same way, except we take a look at not the earnings, which is an accounting number that tells us how much taxes we have to pay on our earnings, but instead how much cash actually came in the door. And it's often more than the earnings because of various depreciation. Did I spell that right? Various accounting transactions, and the biggest one, depreciation. And then price to sales is the one that was used quite a bit in the late 90s when the internet companies were all the rage and were selling and selling but losing more and more money the more they sold. And figure that one out. And then the last one, but we won't do calculations with this one, is price to book value, where you relate the price of the stock to its book value. Is this where we got off, right, Tuesday? That's where we left off. Everybody, questions, thoughts? I go too fast, just go like this. And it's a very simple calculation. You look up the book value per share, which I asked you to look up in Chapter 5 using the Bloomberg or Yahoo or MarketWatch or whichever one you want to, or you can actually go to the library if you want. And you take the current price and divide it by the book value per share. In general, this should be more than 1. Because if it were 1, that means the price would equal the book value. And doesn't it make sense for a company to be priced more than the company is worth? And we discussed this when we talked about book value. If the price goes below book value, that's a serious situation where investors believe that the company is worth more, taken apart, sold off all the assets, pay off all the debts, and liquidate the company. So historically, it was fairly close. You know, 1.8 was typical, 1.5, 2, now 3, 4, 5, 6, because people think, no, this company is worth far more intact than if it is broken up. So, how do we make money off of this, okay? How do we make money off of this? Well, what we do to predict the future stock price using the price ratios is we multiply an historical price ratio by the expected future price ratio denominator. This is where, in this chapter, it turns out, folks, that it's easier to do the calculations than it is to understand them. Once we do the calculations a couple times, you'll go, well, this isn't too hard. You take that number, put it here, put that number there, and multiply all three of them. But what we're doing is we're just saying, look, folks, if we believe, and it's a big belief, that this company's price ratio is going to basically stay stable, or at least we'll use the average, is what we're actually going to do. We're going to use the five-year average. If we use the average, and then we say, oh, we expect their earnings to grow 8.5% or 10% or whatever it is, 5%, then we should be able to predict the stock price 1 year into the future. So here's the example from the book, Intel. You ever heard of them? Never heard of Intel? Intel? Price to earnings model. It's called the price ratio model. They go by the various names. Price to earnings ratio model. We're looking at Intel. And this, the book, the latest edition of the book, I think they just came out with a new one. I'm not sure. But it was 2009, late 2009. The stock price was $19.40. We go look at the earnings per share or wherever, you know, we go on the web or wherever, we get them from Intel's website. And we say that their earnings per share were 92 cents, right? 92 cents. We go back 5 years and we average up the PE ratio and we find the 5-year average ratio was 20.96. And the analysts, or maybe Intel, or maybe we believe that a year from now, their earnings per share is going to grow, are going to grow, their earnings per share are going to grow at 8.5%. So that's the facts we know. We know that the price is now 1940, it was late 2009. The earnings per share, 92 cents. The PE ratio going back 5 years, 20.96, and the analysts tell us it looks like, you know, PC sales are going to increase, Intel's going to make 8.5% more money next year. So what can we do? What we do is we multiply the historical P/E ratio times next year's projected earnings. Next year's projected earnings. And what are next year's projected earnings? Well, we take the current earnings and we multiply them times 1 plus the growth rate, or our expected growth rate. And it looks scary, but it's really not that scary. What's the current earnings? Everyone just said 92 cents. Wait till I ask you. What's the current earnings?
92
cents. And then we multiply that times 1 plus 8.5%, which, you got your calculators? Who needs a calculator? Okay, bring a 99 cent calculator. Pass these around, please. How much the stock price is going to be in a year? But. Relax, okay? We'll get back to accuracy in a bit. Okay, because we learned on Tuesday, is it going to be easy to predict the future price of a stock?
No.
And you're going to find out it is not easy at all. Right. Okay, so now what's our... So you folks know that 8.5% is really 0.085, right? Nod your head yes or go, no, I don't understand. I'll explain it to you. That's what 8.5% means, por ciento. So what's 1 plus 0.085? 1.085. And so what's 0.92 times that? Now, what's the historical P/E ratio? Somebody already yelled it out before I asked you. 20.96. So you don't understand what the hell I just said. But you look at the numbers and you plug them in and you go, well, that's not that hard. 20.96 times 0.92 times 1, that's supposed to be a 1, believe it or not, 1 plus 0.058 or 1.085. So type that into your calculator and you get 20.92. $20.92. So currently, the price is $19.40, and all we are saying is that if we follow the historical P/E ratio and multiply that times next year's projected earnings, we should get what the stock is worth. Well, what are next year's earnings? They're this year's earnings times what we believe the growth is going to be, 100%. Plus 8.5%, 1.085. I'm sorry?
How can we get that growth rate?
Where do we get the growth rate? Well, some analysts will tell us. They'll say, you know, we're Merrill Stench or we're Ugly Bum Poopies, UBS. And we believe that Intel earnings are going to grow 8.5%. Or you go on Yahoo, which I use, and you'll look at them, and what they do is they take the average of all the analyst estimates. And they'll put it on their website, and they say, you know, the average of the analyst's estimates is that Intel's going to grow their earnings by 8.5%. Now, are they right?
No.
We'll know in a year. You understand? And I can assure you, sometimes they'll be wrong, and sometimes they'll be right. Yes. You're going to ask why?
That was the case, but people should just be, like, in the stock market, like, every year. You know, 1 year you have a good year, so you take it out, or, you know, you have the next year.
Market timing. Do you think it's a good idea?
I mean, if they're giving you these formulas to tell you, like, hey, you know, you're going to make this much, all right, well, you know, if I'm going to lose, you know, why do I want to lose? You know, you want to obviously.
That's a good question. That's a good thing. Remember, don't gamble. Take your money, buy some good stock, and watch it go up. And if it don't go up,
don't buy it.
Well, I mean...
Yeah, it's a joke.
For example, on the guys for the people that are in hedge funds, they keep their money there or in the individual investing. They keep the money like in the market because when the price is low, you buy more.
Well, it's easier said than done. You know, when the price goes, you got, what did you guys? You just wanted to sell DDD, didn't you?
Some of you said, sell that turkey. And I said, well, wait a minute. You know, that's the time to buy more. If you believe the future of the company is bright. You see? But that's the kind of company DDD is. 3D printing is. I mean, it's very volatile. It's, well, we'll see. You know, that's what it was in 2008. Designed to lose value. But did I lose you, folks? Did you see that the calculation is actually very right? Now, Marcos asked the question, is it accurate? We'll come back to that in a bit. But the calculation itself is actually very easy. You take the historical five-year average, multiply it times the current earnings, times 1 plus the expected growth rate. And the same thing. You do the same thing for price to cash flow. The exact same formula. The earnings per share, I'm sorry, cash flow per share was $1.74. Wait a minute. The earnings were 92 cents and Intel's cash flow was $1.74? What's going on here? Well, if you know anything about chips, these companies have huge depreciation costs. Why? Because it cost them $2 billion to make the first chip. Once they make the first chip, then it costs them a buck or less to make those chips. But they have intensive startup costs. And so they have huge depreciation expenses that they get to reduce their earnings, so they pay fewer taxes. But that cash is still coming in the door, as we talked about on Tuesday. You accountants, you understand this, because you've done the transactions where you said, hey, look, we take our earnings, the money came in the door, and we then reduce our earnings by depreciation. But we never wrote out a check to depreciation. We didn't give it, money didn't come out the door, didn't go out of our checkbook. So our cash flow in the case of Intel is much higher than our earnings. So we go back 5 years, and we find that the five-year average is equal to, 10.85. That's the five-year average. And the analysts are telling us that they expect the growth in cash flow for the next year to be 7.5%. So we do the exact same thing. We take the historical price to cash flow ratio. What's the historical price to cash flow ratio? Everyone says 10.85. What's the historical price to cash flow ratio? 10.85. We then multiply it by the current cash flow per share. Everyone should say $1.74. Just point to the numbers, right? Point to them. What's the current cash flow per share? 1.74. And then we multiply that times 1. That's a parenthesis. Plus what the analysts tell us, or what we believe, or what Intel tells us, is going to be their cash flow growth. 7.5%, which is 0.075, or 1.075. Everybody understand how we go from here to here? If not, just go like this. Go help. Okay, so do the calculation. 10.5 times 1.74 times 1.075, and $20.29, says Daniel. Is he right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, good. Which is a little less than our price to earnings ratio model. The price to earnings ratio model is a little bit more optimistic, but 20.29, still not bad. I'll take that, right? And then the exact, so make sure we understand this, right? Nod your head, yes? Okay. The exact same model, price to sales, but it's the exact same calculation. In late 2009, the sales per share was $6.76. We go back 5 years, and the price to sales average is, 3.14? And the analysts are telling us that they believe that next year Intel's sales will grow by 7%. So can you guess what we're going to do? We're going to take the five-year average. Everyone should say 3.14. Five-year average? 3.14. We're going to multiply it times the current sales per share of 6.76. And we're going to multiply that times 1 plus what the analysts are telling us Intel is going to increase their sales by.
It's 7%.
Okay, good. 7%, 1.07. So go ahead and do that calculation. 22.71. So this is a little bit more optimistic than either of the other two. I know you don't understand what the hell we're doing, but isn't the calculation easy? Yeah, once you understand, you take this number, you put it here, you take that number, you put it there, you take that number, you put it there, you get a number. And what that number is saying is this is what we believe that the price of Intel is going to be 1 year in the future. Now, let's get back to Marcos's question. Is it accurate? Okay. Can we reasonably assume that the formulas on the previous slides will give us realistic figures? For many companies, yes. For many companies, no. But there are countless other factors at work. It's like trying to predict the weather, only worse. It's like going outside and looking, well, it's sunny now. Maybe tomorrow it'll be sunny. Because who knows what's going to happen tomorrow? The major of the assumption in these models is that the price multiples will remain constant. However, we are using five-year averages without taking into account the variance and standard deviation of the average. Do you remember those? Yeah. Next year, do you think that the PE is going to be what it was, the average over the last 5 years? No. Is it reasonable to expect predictions from these models to be accurate if the variances of the average are large? No, because the price to earnings average could be a high 30, down to 10, back to 22, up 17. You just don't know what's going to happen next year. And so for the record, the price of Intel 1 year later in 2010 was around $20.50. So not bad, eh? 1 out of 4 ain't good. You go back to the 3rd, 4th, and 5th editions, and every one of them was wrong by sometimes a large margin. The 3rd edition predictions were $19.61, $27.54, and $31.63, and Intel was actually selling for more than all three, $33.50. And that actually wasn't too bad. In the 4th, they were predicting $50, $43, and $41, and it was $17.50. How's that for a prediction? In the 5th edition, they're predicting 25, 25, and 29, and they got 20. So what's the moral? You can't really put too much confidence in these, especially with companies that have very unpredictable PE, price to cash flow, and price to sales ratios. If you go back and look at the Disney predictions, which are also in the 4th, 5th, and 6th editions, not in the 3rd, you'll find that those are actually pretty darn close. So figure it, right? Disney, a much less volatile company. I mean, because people are always buying their DVDs now or whatever, now or downloading them or whatever, going to the theme parks, and every once in a while they have a blockbuster movie, or every once in a while they have a dud. How much did they spend on that Lone Ranger last year? $200 million? $200 million, right? And it was, what? Did you watch it? Well, you're unlike many other people who didn't even bother going. What? You free tickets, right? That's what it was worth. You saw what they did to him. Okay, well, they paid.
Did you see what happened with Star Wars now?
Well, they own Star Wars now. They bought Star Wars, yeah. Okay, so what do you think, folks? Are you encouraged? Not to use them. Okay, let's do now worksheet number one. Worksheet number one. Who will read worksheet number one?
I'll read it.
All right, Daniel. Okay. He's in a good mood today.
The price of wheat that brand can have is with how
price expected to work at 5% each year, when would you expect the price to be?
Okay, so what is this?
We got burnt.
We got burnt, and how? I search high and low for my jokes. Mostly low. We got burned now. Okay, so this year they're currently selling for $32, and their earnings per share are $2.25. We go back 5 years and find that their P/E ratio has averaged 18. If the analyst, or if we believe that their earnings are going to grow by 5%, what do we do to predict next year's price? What?
Roll the bones.
Roll the bones. You
just multiply all of them, but the
100% plus 5%. Yeah. If you just multiply by 5%, you'd get the extra amount, and then you could add it on to the original. But it's easier to do 1 plus 5%. So what's the historical average? Everyone should say 18. Wait till I ask you. What's the historical average?
18.
Times the current earnings per share? 2.25 times 1 plus the growth rate of 5%, 0.05 or 1.05. So in reality, the calculation's pretty straightforward, simple. And you do it enough times and you won't forget it, and then maybe you'll understand what the hell you're doing. And if you don't understand, don't worry about it. It's easy enough to do without understanding what the hell you're doing. So what do we expect we got burnt to be and how to be equal to a year from now? 22? $42 and 52 cents? 53? Close enough. You don't have to round as well. You can put down whatever the calculator says. We are not looking for precision. Our... Okay, so the next one, number two. How about it there, Jared? Do you want to read number two? No, he doesn't want to read. Daniel! He should do the whole worksheet, yes. Well, I don't know. I think I had jokes this morning. That was pretty good. Okay. There you go. Let's hear it.
How do you think cash flow per share is going to be 2.80 per share? Your 5-year average price to cash flow per share ratio is 14. If we expect your cash flow per share to grow by 6% next year, what would you expect your price to be next year?
So we're looking at a growth rate of the cash flow of 6%. We go back 5 years, we find that their price to cash flow ratio is average 14, and the current cash flow per share is $2.80. So
plug it all in.
What's the average? 14. What's the current cash flow per share? $2.80. What's the growth rate? 1 plus 6%, 1.06. And the second model is telling us that we believe the price is going to be $41.55, or close enough. Piece of cake?
Absolutely.
Yeah, once you do it enough times, it's actually very simple. It's penetrating the fog of what the hell you're doing. That's the hard part. Now, the last one. Daniel?
Okay. WPH sales per share is currently 2.20 per share. The 5-year average price of sales per share ratio is 30. If you expect their sales per share to grow by 8% next year, what would you expect their price to be?
And what was the growth rate of sales? 8%. 8% sales growth rate. So plug them in. 5-year average? 15 or 13?
13.
What's the 5-year average? Everyone say 13. Wait till I ask you. What's the 5-year average?
13.
What's the current sales per share? And times 1 plus the growth rate of? 8%, 1.08, and what is our 44.93. Okay, those are the price ratios. Very straightforward. The author puts them at the back of the chapter, which I think is a bit of a shame because they're the easier ones. And I'd rather do, personally, I'd rather do the easier ones than do the harder ones. But that's up to them. They make the book. Questions, thoughts? Okay, let's continue. Wee doggies. Let's continue. Now we need some mystical music here, and I didn't have a chance to put it in because I had some problems with the PowerPoint. We need some you have to think of Hindu music, you know, Indian music. Because we're going to take a look at some very powerful models for valuing stocks. Are they going to be any better than the price models? Yeah, it depends on the company. The dividend discount models, and they go by various names, cash discounted cash flow models, dividend valuation models, DVMs, DDMs. They are valued on the basis of the present value of the future dividend streams that the stock is projected to produce. So what are we looking for? Dividends. Some companies don't pay dividends, so can we use these models with them?
No.
Yeah. If you recall from Tuesday, we said that the value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. What is the stock going to give me in terms of dividends, and what is it worth to me today? Therefore, dividend discount models should be extremely popular, right? Well, not in the 1980s and 90s, especially in the 90s. Investors who adhered to these types of models were considered old-fashioned, outdated fuddy-duddies. But you know what? They held up very, very well in 2000 to 2002. Whereas the people who were just looking for speculation for capital gains got hammered. Some of these people actually went up. Their stocks went up. Not all. Everybody went, you know, had a rough time. How about 2009? No, it didn't help. There was no place to hide. The dividend discount model, in its purest incarnation, looks like this. The value of the stock, the price at time zero today, is equal to the dividend for the first year divided by 1 plus K. Now, price, dividend, what's K? You baseball fans, what's K? Strikeout, yeah, right. No, I don't know why they use K, but for some reason, K is our required rate of return. What are we looking for? What is our rate of return that we're interested in? 8%, 10%, 5%. So it depends on who the investor is. And then we add to that the dividend for year number 2 divided by 1 plus K squared, dividend 3 divided by 1 plus k to the third. Now, I told you, I promised you, you wouldn't have to do exponents, right? Didn't I? And I didn't lie. Oh, I didn't lie. We mortals use the tables on the back, okay? You don't need a calculator as explanation. We're going to use these tables right here. So just bear with me.
What do you mean by we mortals?
Mortals. We normal people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we just grunts. We regular grunts, you know. Yeah, not eggheads, not the propeller heads, whatever you want to call them, the wonder nerds, whatever. And you do that until time T, until year T, you know, 5 years, 10 years, whatever. The book has an example, which is actually not a very good example. They say we have a company that's going to pay $100 in dividends this year, next year, and the third year, and then probably go out of business. So how do we do that? Well, we take $100 divided by, and the book wants a 15% return on investment. You're right. Wrong. That's too much in my personal opinion, but hey, that's what they want. So you take $100 divided by 1.15 in the first year, $100 divided by 1.15 squared the second year, $100 divided by 1.15 to the third power in the third year, and that's worth $228. So we would be willing to pay $225 for it. If it were less than that, hey, we're getting a bargain. We believe it's worth $228.
If it's more than that, we think we're getting screwed. So we don't want to buy it. Or we need to reduce our required rate of return. Are you with me? Don't worry, you don't have to do these calculations. I'm sorry, back here. But how many companies pay these annual dividends and then go out of business? Plus, we keep using this term, present value. What does it mean? The present value, dear students, now some of you might remember this from the 121 class. In the 121 class, they show you present value in chapter 1. And then, like, if it was me, I'd just get rid of it out of the book. Because we learn how to go from the present into the future, and that's called the future value. We learn if we put $10,000 away today, what's it going to be worth in 10 years if we get 8%? That's what this calculation is. If we put $10,000 today in a bank, and you're not going to get 8% in the bank, but let's say we get 8%, the future value multiplier is 1 plus the 8% to 10, but that's we don't do that. We just look at the number in the table, and it's 2.1589. So $10,000 put away today will become $21,589 in 10 years if we can get 8%. But we're going the other way. We're looking into the future and saying, okay, we're going to get a certain amount of money someday in the future. What is it worth to us today? So it's the inverse. It's just the other side of the coin. You just flip the coin, now you're looking at the other side. If we know that we're going to get $21,589 10 years from now, and we require, this is what we want 8%, we need to be able to bring that back to the present. We need to be able to give that a value. We know we're going to get $21,589 in 10 years, or at least we expect to get that, and we want 8%. What are we willing to pay for that $21,589? Well, the calculation is 1 divided by that, but we're not going to do exponentiation. We look up in the table. Look in the table. Go across the 8%, down to 10 years, and you should see... Yes, you didn't get one. I'm sorry. 0.463, and so we multiply the $21,589 times 0.414632, or whatever. Is it different? It's different than the one in here? Go to 8% down 10 years. 463. No, it's close enough. 463. Did you get 463?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought someone said something differently. And so what does that tell us? It tells us that we're willing to pay $10,000 for that $21,589 10 years from now. So what would you rather have? $10,000 now or $21,589 in 10 years? Doesn't matter. If you require and you get an 8% rate of return, the two are equivalent. Are you with me? Okay, good. Present value and future value are just two sides of the same coin. In finance, present value tells us what the future value is worth now. And some of you might have, in Chapter 1, gone through those calculations, the future value tables. But I told you don't have to worry about that. That's what we learn in 121. We just know that if we do what we need to do, we invest wisely, prudently for the long term, get 8, 9, 10%, yippee, we're going to do okay. All right? Go. So, did that formula scare you? Huh? With all the exponentiations? Good, because you don't have to do it. This formula has the present value calculation built into it. That's exactly what it is. There it is. That's the present value. We mortals, there's the word mortals, we simply use the present value tables. Just as we use the future value tables in Chapter 1 of this class, we didn't do it, but in the 121 class. So the formula then becomes the dividend we earn in that first year times the present value multiplier for that first year plus the dividend in the second year times the present value multiplier in the second year times plus the present dividend for the third year, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the same example over again. What's $100 worth to us 1 year in the future at 15%? Go across 15, down 1 year. Down 1 year, just 1 year. Go across 15%. No, over here, yeah. 0.870. So that $100 a year from now, today is worth $87. If we get 15%. Is it likely we're going to get 15%? It happens sometimes, but not something I would certainly count on. It's happened over the last 5 years, but that's after losing 50%. That's after the market going down 50%. In year number two, that same $100 is multiplied by the present value multiplier for year number two for 15. Go across 15, down 2 years, 0.756. So that $100 2 years from now, today in the present, is worth us $75.60. Year number three, $100 times the present value multiplier for year number three, which is 658. Everybody with us? You see them? So that's $65.80. You add those three up and you get $228.40, which is very similar to the $220.32. And why is it 8 cents off? Because if we had more if we had more digits of accuracy, they would be exactly the same. With me? Okay, good. Great. So actually the calculations are pretty straightforward. Again, just like the price models, the calculations are not that hard. It's the comprehension that people have trouble with. Because when you say, well, we need to discount this stream of future income, they look at you, huh? What are you talking about? Discount. That's the word we use. When you multiply, let's go back one. When you take that $100 and multiply it times that future value multiplier, you are discounting. It has nothing to do with going to Macy's or JCPenney's and getting a discount. It's the verb we use. When we move from the future into the, when we move from the present into the future, we call it compounding. You've heard that term? Compounding into the future. When we go from the future back to the present, we are discounting. We're bringing it back to the present. That's the verb. I'm sorry, I didn't make it up. So let's take a look at some dividend discount models and in increasing complexity and sophistication. The very first model, by the way, is not covered in your book, which I think is a bit of a shame, because it starts the building process. And that's the zero growth model. This is where I really wish I had more whiteboard. The zero growth model assumes that the company has been paying dividends at a constant rate and will continue to pay dividends at the same rate into the future. They're not going to grow their dividends. The value of the stock, please somebody fix that, is equal to the annual dividends that you receive from the company divided by your required rate of return, what you want from the company. Okay, now an example. If we're getting $3 from a stock and we require a 6% rate of return, we simply take the $3 and divide it by 0.06, because that's what 6% is, right? And you find that you would be willing to pay $50 for this stock. What if it's priced less than $50? Cool, right? We can buy $50 of stock, what we believe is $50, for less than $50. What if it's priced higher? It's not a very good deal, is it? Are you with me? Understand what's going on? We think it's worth 50, but Mr. Market says, oh no, it's worth 45. The investors are bidding the price down to 45. Hey, what a deal. If the investors are bidding the price up to 60, not a good deal, is it? So it's a relatively straightforward calculation. Does it look familiar? Well, if you go back to Chapter 5 when we learned about dividend yield, it's simply another way of looking at the dividend yield. We took the annual dividends, $3, and we divided by the market price of the stock, let's say it's $50, and we get 0.06 or 6%. So you math fans know that we simply just swapped these two terms. That's all we did. We just inverted the quotient. I don't know. You know what I'm talking about. Don't worry about it. People who emphasize the zero growth model are valuing the stock almost exclusively, exclusively for its dividend yield. These are the yield hogs. These are the people who want dividend yield. Are you with me? Okay, let's take a look at an example. Now, have you ever heard of Consolidated Edison? No? Well, if you went live back east, you would know about them. They're the electric company that's been around for over 130 years for New York City. Remember Thomas Edison?
Oh,
yeah, remember Thomas Edison. And so their symbol is ED, and it was made up a long time before Viagra. And the current market price is $55.90. So Consolidated Edison's market price is $55.29 on February 21st. They are paying $2.52, and they've been paying that dividend for several years now. Utilities are the poster child for the zero growth model. What is our required rate of return? Well, let's say it's 8%. If we take the $2.52 and divide it by 8%, what happens is we think the stock is only worth $31.50. But the market price is $55. Not a very good deal, is it? No, in fact, it's horrible. What if we say, okay, let's reduce our required rate of return to 5%? Let's accept a smaller rate of return. Then we take $2.52 divided by 5%, and we get $50.40, and we find that the stock is still too expensive. Are you with me? And this is very true now. Yields on bonds and savings accounts are really low, so many of the stocks that traditionally have paid very reliable dividends and used to pay 4, 5, 6% are now paying, in this case, 4.6%. Investors are requiring a yield of 4.6%. So if we changed our required rate of return down to 4.6%, bingo, we'd hit our $55.29 target. If it were less, if we went down to 4%, it would actually be worth more to us. Make sense? Well, you can, and you'll get the same number. But what we're saying is, what are we requiring? If we're requiring more than 4.6%, is this a good deal for us? No, it's not. It's terrible. But what are you going to do? That's the low-yield environment we live in right now. So let's do number four, which incidentally is, if you'll notice, also an utility stock. Hint, hint, hint. And maybe a utility stock in worksheet number 2, and the assignment for chapter 6, and the exam. And they may all be in the same order. Hint, hint, hint. The astute student will notice the pattern. Okay, who will read number 4? Daniel will read number 4. So if you see a utility that's been paying a dividend a certain amount for several years and is expected to continue to pay it into the future, which model are you going to use?
Zero growth model.
Zero growth model. Very good. So it's been paying $1.25, and we require a rate of return of 6%. What do you do? $1.25 divided by 0.06, and what do we think the stock is worth?
$20.83.
Everybody get that? What's the stock selling for? The market price, as Benjamin Graham says, Mr. Market is offering it to us for $20. So do we think it's a good price? Yeah. We believe it is worth $20.83, given our required rate of return of 6%. The market is offering it to us at $20, so we think it's a good price. What if we raised our required rate of return to 8%? Do you think it would still fit the definition?
No.
Probably not. Right, exactly. And what, are you going to get 8% from the utility? Not in these days, no, but over the long term. In fact, there's that one Franklin Utilities Fund returning 9.5%. It's a utilities fund returning 9.5% for over 50 years. I don't know what they're doing, but they're doing something good. Franklin's a good company. I don't have any mutual funds with them, but Franklin's a very good company, don't get me wrong. Okay, now, this comes from to you from the Department of Redundancy Department.
What?
Department of Redundancy Department. The Constant Perpetual Growth Model. Don't you just love that name? Constant Perpetual Growth Model. Doesn't constant and perpetual mean the same thing? So it's the perpetual petrol or the constant, but it's called the Constant Perpetual Growth Model. So just learn how to do it. Deal with it, as they say. Constant Perpetual Growth Model. And what we do with this model is we simply take the zero growth model one step further. You see, annual dividends divided by required rate of return? Well, this one says that our stock is worth the annual dividends divided by the required rate of return, but this stock is raising their dividend yield. Every year they've been adding to their dividends. Constantly, perpetually. And so what we do is we add a term which should look familiar because it's what we do over here in the price models, 1 plus the growth rate of the dividends, the constant dividend growth rate. Does that look familiar? 1 plus the growth rate. And then we remove the dividend growth rate from the denominator, from the required rate of return. So on page 184 of the sixth edition, they have an example of a $10 per share. The dividend is $10, and this company has been growing their dividend for 5% for many years. If our required rate of return, again, K, strikeout, is 15%, what would we expect this stock to be worth? Well, you plug in the numbers. What's our annual dividend? Everyone should say $10. Wait till I ask. Wait, you guys haven't learned yet. What is it? What's our annual dividend?
$10.
We multiply that times 1 plus the growth rate. What's the growth rate? 5%. And we divide that by our required rate of return, 15%, minus the growth rate, 5%. So that's $10 times 1.05. 0.15 divided by minus 0.05. So $10 times 1.05? $10.50. 0.15 divided by 0.05? 0.1. So we believe the stock is worth $105. This model is great for companies with consistent dividend growth. So let's take a look at some real life examples. Have you ever heard of Johnson & Johnson?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What do they make? Q-tips, Tylenol, Band-Aids. What do you call this thing? Do you call it an adhesive plastic first aid strip? Bandage? You do? What do you call it? A Band-Aid, right. And what you wouldn't give to get your brand name into the language, right? That's, you don't search for something on the internet. What do? You Bing it, right? You Bing it. You Google. You don't copy. You don't make a copy of it. You Xerox it, right? You Xerox a copy, photocopy. You don't get a napkin or what is it, not a napkin? A Kleenex, right? Kleenex. Yeah. Right. Tissue. Right. $5. Yeah. Okay. So Johnson & Johnson. How are we doing over time? Not bad. Are you learning something?
No?
Okay. Oh, good. On the 21st of February, Johnson & Johnson was selling for $91.52. They are paying $2.40, but let's assume that they've been growing their dividend at 8% a year. Very cool. We go back and see if they're growing their dividend 8% a year. If our required rate of return is 13%, plugging in the numbers, the annual dividend times 1.08 divided by the 13% minus the 8% gives us this 2.8512 divided by 5% or $57.
It's selling for 91. So if we require a 13% rate of return, the model is telling us that we ain't going to get it. Are you with me? But if we simply lower our required rate of return to 10%, then the model changes very drastically. The model is very sensitive to our choice of required rate of return. And this is why numbers are all over the map. Because everybody looks at a stock and wants something different. You with me, understand? And that's why you say, well, shoot, you know, I'm not going to touch this. And somebody else say, oh, no, that's what I want. If our required rate of return were only 10%, then it's $2.64 times 1 plus the growth rate doesn't change. We get the 2.8512. But now 10% minus 8% is 2%. And so now the model is telling us that Johnson & Johnson's worth $142.50. All right, you see? Would you be happy with 10%? Yes. Does the model saying you're going to get 10% mean you're going to get 10%? No. But what we're doing is we're tilting the odds in our favor. We're telling us, look, if we think we're going to get 13% from this stock, you know, we're probably going to be disappointed. But if we're only expecting 10 or maybe 8, then we probably will. Does, no guarantee, but we're probably going to fulfill our accomplishment.
What's that 2% that you
divided? Okay, 10% is the required rate of return, what we want to get. That, and they, exactly, minus 8%, they've been growing their dividends at 8%. That's the 2%. Make sure? Make sure, because we're going to do it in a bit. We're going to do
that the...
That's why 13 minus 8% is 5%. Okay, now another company you may have heard of, Procter & Gamble.
Yeah.
Heard of them? Right, exactly. Current market price, almost $78. They've been paying, they are paying $2.41. And again, let's assume that they're growing their dividends at 8%. If we use 13%, plugging in the numbers, 13 minus 8%, 0.05, right? We wind up with $52. But it's selling for 78. Yeah. But if we, again, lower our required rate of return to 10%, plugging in the numbers, the model is saying that Procter & Gamble is worth $130. Do you think people are going to stop buying soap and shampoo and diapers? And I don't think so. Yeah.
An incident.
Yeah,
where these activists all climbed the building and they put this huge...
Ivory Snope on it?
No, it was about how they use their oil and how it's somehow affecting tires, but it's like these massive banners. And they...
In Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're based in Cincinnati.
They brought, like, these people, the activists, they were hanging from the buildings and stuff, like, all on their own. No one was helping, and police had them.
I can imagine.
Huge, like, that
and these are, was this PETA, the people
no,
for
like
the eating of animals?
Greenpeace.
Oh, Greenpeace, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know,
you know, what can I say? I do know that they used to do horrible things to animals. I don't know if they still do it. They would, you know, burn the skin off of a rabbit and then put the stuff on there and see if it made it better. It's a rabbit. But I don't know. You know, that gets into politics and ethics and everything. Yeah, but I don't think they do that anymore. Okay, how about Coca-Cola? You like Coca-Cola? Neither do I. I hate this stuff, but hey. Current market price is $37. It makes your teeth feel really weird, doesn't it? $37. Currently paying $1.22 in dividends, and let's assume again that they're increasing their dividends at 8%. The required rate of return of 13%, we plug in the numbers, we get $26. It's selling for $37. But if we lower our required rate of return to 10%, then what happens is we wind up believing that Coke is worth $65. The average person in the United States drinks over 400 Cokes a year, which means somebody's drinking 800 because I don't drink any.
20 years ago in China, it was one or two. I think in 1991 or so, there was one and a half Cokes per year. They're up to 38. I think this is 2012. India, 20 years ago, nobody drank it. Now they're up to 12. Which country drinks the most Cokes per capita?
Mexico!
You go down to Mexico, and they have dirt floors, and they have old jalopy, but they all drink coca. Nuts. And you cross the border? Well, you used to. Now you walk on the other side. You cross the border, what's the first thing you see? Used to be. McDonald's, with the Coca-Cola there. When you walk across the right, now you walk across the left side, and you don't see the McDonald's anymore. Okay. Now, GE, General Electric. Current market price almost $25, currently paying 88 cents per share. Let's assume that dividends are growing around 8% per year. At 13%, we get $19. But at 10%, we get $47.50. But, folks, this is what can happen to you. GE, everyone thinks GE, industrials, jet engines, locomotives, power plants, lighting. But they, throughout the 90s and 2000s, up until the Great Recession, they made more of their money from finance and loans and leasing and interest. And did they get hammered by the Great Recession? Oh, yeah. This is after GE dropped its dividend down to 40 cents from $1.24. Now, this company's been paying dividends for over 100 years, and they've been raising their dividends quite smartly. And then the Great Recession hit, and they were just hammered. Their stock price fell like a stone, and who jumped in and bought $5 billion worth? Mr. Buffett. Warren Buffett jumped in and bought $5 billion worth of GE.
Dang.
And then what happened is in 2010, they said, we're coming back. They raised the dividend to 48 cents. To 56 cents, to 60, to 68, 76, and now this year it's 88 cents per year. So would you buy GE? And then our last example is Altria. What do they make, folks, dear students? You know them as Philip Morris and Virginia Dims. Ciggies, little white tubes of tobacco. How much does it cost to make a cigarette?
1.2 cents.
And they sell 20 of them in a box for $7? Current market price is $35. Annual dividend, $1.92. Again, let's assume they're growing at 8% per year. Same required rate of return of 13%. Plugging in the numbers, $1.92 times 1.08 divided by 13% minus 8%. That's 2.0736 divided by 0.05 or $41. The model is telling us that Philip Morris, Altria, is going to give us a better than 13% rate of return if you ignore the potential tobacco-related lawsuit damage and the fact that tobacco kills 400,000 Americans every year. Do you want to invest in a company that, when used as directed, their product kills their customers?
Yes,
as a matter of fact, you do. Yes. Yeah. What? It's addictive. You're getting to sell a drug. Yes, exactly. And I remember the Louis Rutkauser, a guy I showed you a couple times. He was interviewing a guy who was a mutual fund manager who was a devout Mormon. And you know, Mormons don't smoke. They don't drink alcohol. They don't even drink coffee, right? No caffeine. Yeah. Sodas are okay. I think sodas are okay. I'm not sure. Anybody Mormon, tell us. And Mr. Rutkauser said, well, aren't you a devout Mormon? He says, yes. And you don't smoke. Oh, no, you don't drink it. So why would you invest in Philip Morris? He says, well, there are no secrets here. If you really still believe that cigarette smoking is harmless, you've been, you really have something mentally wrong with it. He didn't say it that way. That's the way I would say it. And he just said, hey, this is business. So would you buy Altria?
No.
Okay. Oh, who's that? Who is that? Yeah? Who are you?
You know who it is.
It's my conscience.
Come clean.
Come clean about what?
Fess up.
Fess up. What are you talking about?
Where did you get the assumed dividend growth, huh?
I made them up.
Huh?
I made them up! All these companies are growing their dividends faster than 8%!
That's better.
Don't you just hate having a conscience? Every one of these stocks, we said we are assuming an 8% dividend growth rate, right? Was that creepy? Well, that was the problem I would have. It works fine at home. It didn't work here. All of a sudden, I hate Microsoft. Yes, folks, the constant perpetual growth model is very sensitive to assumed dividend growth rates. But the recent dividend growth rates of Coke, Altria, Procter & Gamble, and Johnson & Johnson are all currently higher than 8%. Coke is 8.8, Johnson & Johnson 9.1, Procter & Gamble 9.5, and Altria has been raising their dividend at over 10%. GE has been raising their dividend at over 20%, but that's after dropping 70% or whatever it dropped. But the model doesn't work. The model does not work if the required rate of return is equal to or less than the dividend growth rate. You get division by zero, or you get a negative price. It doesn't make any sense. Therefore, we should raise our expected rates of return for all these companies. All of these companies, according to our model, are better buys than the 10% that we've been looking at. Are you with me? But these are blue chip companies with long histories of rising dividends. They are in rarefied company. But they're not alone. You ever hear of McDonald's, ExxonMobil, 3M, United Technologies? These blue chip companies, roots deep in the economy, have been, yum, that's Kentucky Fried Rat. They have been raising their dividends over decades. So let's take a look at number five. Who will read number five?
I'll read it.
Okay.
It was pretty good. The stock is paying 1.85 cents per year in dividends. Their dividend growth rate has been very constant at 4%. Our expected rate of return is 9%. At what price will we consider Pictures to be a good investment? What dividend discount model do you use?
Okay, so if you see, and it may be the fifth one, right, after the utility, a company that has been raising their dividend at a constant rate, which model are you going to use? The constant perpetual growth model. And what are they paying in dividends? 85 cents. And we have found, or we've been watching them, and they've been growing their dividends at what rate? 4%, so 1 plus exactly, 0.04, 1.04. And then what's our required rate of return?
9%.
Everyone should say 9%.
9%.
Okay, good. Because that's what it says on the book, right? 9%, and the growth rate is
4%.
So that's 0.85 times 1.04 divided by 0.09 minus 0.04. So what's 0.85 times 1.04?
0.884.
You're letting Andrea do all the fun, okay? What is it? 884, whatever. You know, don't have to get close. And then 0.09 divided by 0.04 is? Everyone just say
0.05.
Okay, and what is it? What do we think it's worth?
$17.68.
Now, this doesn't say what the price is, right? Doesn't tell you what the price is. Yeah. If the price were $20, we'd say, not a very good deal. If the price were $15, yippee. Okay, you with me, folks? What do you think? Isn't this exciting? Is it going to make you a better investor?
Yes.
I hope so. It'll, I believe, tilt the odds in your favor. Is it a guarantee of success? No. Good. I'm glad you congrats to that. Okay, yes. Black box. What black box?
People said they have a calculation.
They have a calculation. It's mysterious inside the black box. This is not the one. I don't know. Maybe it is. But be careful, folks, because people tell you all kinds of things. I told you about this guy. Did I tell you about this? These kids? These were students. These were teenagers. Two British teens ran a stock picking robot scam. It sounded far fetched,
a stock-picking robot that could identify penny stocks poised to double in price. Turns out it was far-fetched. These were two 20-year-old twin brothers in Britain claiming that they duped 75,000 people, mostly Americans, into paying $47 each to get stock tips from a robot dubbed Marl. They told investors that Marl ran on a computer code written partly by a one-time Goldman Sachs programmer who didn't exist, the Securities Exchange Commission said. And people believe them. So I don't know about black box, but this is the constant perpetual growth model. And if you believe that the constant perpetual growth model will help you identify companies that will fulfill your long-term, prudent, patient goals, then I hope it does for you. And if you don't believe them, don't worry about it. Okay, now, the book also has the constant growth model, which is really the constant perpetual growth model with an added term to account for growth for a number of years. This model takes the constant perpetual growth model one step further, adding a term to account for constant growth for a number of years. Do you have to know this one? Everyone say no. Do you have to know this one?
No.
And then they take it even one step further. And if you're into math, maybe this turns you on, but many decades ago, in The Intelligent Investor, Benjamin Graham warned against using overly sophisticated mathematical models to value stocks. And it may look impressive, especially to those who love math, but it has some serious problems, dear students. It is very difficult to accurately predict future dividend growth during the initial fast growth stage of a stock. Usually, companies don't pay dividends during the fast growth stage, or maybe, nothing. So, let's take a look at some observations of the dividend discount models. How do you use them for a company that isn't paying any dividends? Is zero, right? Because dividend zero times anything is zero. The constant perpetual growth model is usually an unrealistic assumption, except for a very few small number of companies. Dividend growth rates are very difficult to estimate. With large cap, well-established companies, historical growth rates may be useful. But with fast-growing companies and new industries, it is almost impossible. The problems of the dividend discount models notwithstanding. Repeat after me. The value of a stock.
Is based on the present value
of its future cash flows. Very cool. Now, what we're going to do when we come back, we're going to learn the last one. And so if you miss Tuesday, contact me, come to my office, go online, make sure you can do these, because this is the most exciting model. It is called the discounted cash flow model. And then we will have... We'll go over the worksheet number one. We'll do worksheet number two. And we will do these over and over again on Tuesday in preparation for doing them on Thursday. I wish you all great success and see you on Tuesday. Lots of time studying. No football this weekend, right? Okay, who came in late?